Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Gambling Podcast. I'm your host, Sean, stacking the green with my partner in picks, Ryan, Big Dog Kramer. What's happening, Ryan?
Everything, Sean. Everything.
Everything.
Big weekend.
Big weekend. Your New York Giants went into the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field and upset the heavily favored Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, all right. So all week, we've had to listen to people, Packer fans especially, talk about if not for the drops, the Packers would have been right in the game. And it's like, all right, stop for a second. Not only did they get dominated, but they also got every break, from what I could tell.
Yeah, I mean, I guess their counter, if I was to play devil's advocate of a Green Bay Packers fan, is, well, yeah, sure, we got that fumble that was clearly a fumble, but you guys got the Hail Mary play.
Okay, then I would come to the two late hits on Eli Manning that weren't called, followed by the awful roughing the passer that Rodgers got called for him.
Yeah, that was almost just it felt like, okay, hey, we realize we want you guys to watch this game for a little bit longer, so we're going to make it a little bit interesting, even though the game was over by then. Some of us wanted the over to hit in that particular game, myself included. I forgot that I picked under on the podcast, and then I had parlayed the Giants and the over, so I ended up winning that. I forgot my own picks, which thankfully in that case came out a winner.
That happens in the heat of the moment, you know.
Yep. All right. Well, let's see your. Let's do a little recap of the divisional playoffs. Well, yeah. We'll just keep rolling with your New York Giants, 37-20. They busted the over. Jesus Christ!
It's that exciting, huh?
Yeah. They busted the over, 57 points. The over/under was at 52.5, and looks like they were 7.5-point dogs at the closing time of the game, so they won that outright. What was the money line at, Ryan?
Oh, you mean my money line pick of the week?
Yep.
Depending on when you bet it, you could have gotten it anywhere from 310 to 270. It opened and closed right around 300, though.
That is weird, this game, and the idea that the only thing that made me want to pick Green Bay is how everyone was like, this Giants team is hot. This is like how they were in 2007. They're going to go into Green Bay and win. It just seemed like way too much of a public play.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Simmons pointed it out. And that never happens. When everyone's on an underdog like this, never comes out.
Well, and the public must be doing all right this year, because it seemed like the other bet that people were high on, or it seemed like a lot of chatter, was that Detroit-New Orleans over in the wild card game. And I bet against it, just kind of going on the mindset of, hey, bet against the public. They don't know what they're doing.
Although this weekend it was clearly split. I think the public probably went 2-2. The public probably was all over the Saints and the Broncos. And they obviously did not win, so.
All right, so let's keep breaking down this Giants-Packers game. Ryan, what were the Amazon keys to victory?
Oh, wow.
The Amazon keys to victory, you can go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You can subscribe to the podcast, and you can click the Amazon link. It's pretty easy. Whatever you get off Amazon counts towards the Sports Gambling Podcast. Good times all around.
Do you think we can work on getting a local sponsorship of is it Barry's Tickets?
Yeah, Barry's Tickets.
Barry's Tickets!
Local L.A. ticket place that Petros Papadakis,
oh, man,
does commercials for. He does live reads for. He's one of these guys that I kind of enjoy Petros, but I feel like I got like a five-minute window I can listen to this guy. Just because of his voice. And just that constant yelling and not yelling and yelling.
He's basically the Greek Stephen A. Smith, right?
Right. We were talking about that earlier today, that Stephen A. Smith. Listen, I get it. You're in broadcasting. You want to do what gets you attention. You want to do what gets you noticed. You do a little wacky stuff. You amp stuff up. Maybe Stephen A. Smith shouldn't be taking broadcasting tips from a man like myself. But I'll tell you, Stephen, you got to make it a little bit real, all right? If good talk radio is sounding like you're having a conversation, Stephen A. Smith, you wouldn't stay in the same room with that guy.
Do you think Chris Rock gets mad that Stephen A. Smith ripped off his bit?
But Chris Rock peppers it up with punchlines. He's, you know, Stephen A. Smith is just yelling about guys' hamstrings tightening up. There's nothing there. It doesn't need that energy.
The best is those, how he has this intense rivalry with Skip Bayless.
Yes, that's another thing I love when sports media personalities or like sports writers get into beef with each other as if anyone gives a shit. Oh my God, he called me out here, blah, blah, blah. It's like, get over yourself, guys.
Skip Bayless loves Tim Tebow. Stephen A. hates Tim Tebow.
Yeah, polarizing guy, Tim Tebow. Okay.
Anyway, back to the Giants.
The Amazon keys to victory.
Here was my... So, as all you listeners probably know, I watched the game here at Sean's house. Good setup. To set the stage, real nervous about this game. Couldn't really get into the first game at all. Had to distract myself by making some nice breakfast sandwiches for the crowd. And
Taylor ham, egg and cheese on the griddle.
For those of you not from the north central part of New Jersey, Taylor ham is basically a bologna-like meat with a Spam texture. That you cook basically on a griddle, throw it, slap it on an egg and cheese on an English muffin, and boom.
Yeah, it's like a classy Spam, I would say.
Yeah, anyway. So finally game time rolls around, and first half, the Giants, just like I expect them, moving the ball with ease. Packers appear to be playing the run a little too strongly. Eli's getting tons of time, and he's just picking them apart. But some bad things happen. We don't get that fumble. Blocked field goal. This leads to that. It's 13-10, a little before halftime. Packers driving, and boom. On a play where Aaron Ross pulls the typical Aaron Ross moves, gets beat horribly. OC bails him out by stripping Aaron Rodgers, and Giants get the ball back. They pull a classic Coughlin, and, like, I don't know, really conservative. They run a toss play with no timeouts. Bradshaw somehow runs from one side of the field to the other, gets out of bounds.
I can't remember seeing anything like that at the end of a half where they're literally trying to run the clock out, and they do a toss left to the short side
of the
field. That
Packers defense is really bad.
Yeah, they run a toss left to the short side of the field. You're expecting, okay, maybe he's going to run out of bounds, but then you're like, wait, why are they running the ball if they want to conserve clock? He sees a lane, he cuts back, and for a second there you're like, oh man, maybe he has a chance to go all the way. The safeties end up getting a decent angle on him. He's able to run out of bounds. He runs out of bounds, I want to say, maybe like the 36. 36.
No, he was at the, I want to say, yeah, maybe the 37.
Because it was going to be, if the Giants, so then they had one play left. It was going to be what, like a 53-50?
You know what? It must have been the 43, because I think, or the 33, because I think they said it was a 50-yard field goal. Tynes doesn't come out. They actually run the perfect Hail Mary, and as the play's happening, I'm standing next to a buddy of ours, Cornell, and I go, "Holy crap! Akeem Nicks is wide open." And sure enough, the Packers only had two guys deep. This was the worst executed play I've ever seen on defense. It was. I mean, you can say a Hail Mary is going to be lucky, but he was legitimately. I mean, this was a pass that Matthew Stafford threw the same pass to Calvin Johnson 30 times this year.
Yeah,
and you know, Hakeem Nicks one on one going up for the ball. He's going to catch it more than he's not.
It just looked like a guy who got good position on a rebound. All he did was he just stood in front of the two people or the two defenders. And just waited for the ball to once again hit him in the helmet, kind of David Tyree-esque a little bit. He didn't totally get a secure catch, but then he just had such position and brought the ball down.
So, yeah, that was a huge play. Makes the score 20-10. I'm feeling good, but at the same time, I'm thinking, well, you know, without that fumble, let them get a touch. The score really could be 23-3 right now. It could be really out of hand. Second half starts, and I don't know what happened in that locker room, but the defense, who was already playing well, just came out and was just killing it. And as soon as the score went to, you know, Green Bay, I think, gets a field goal at some point, and the Giants score another touchdown, and that, you know, 30-13, the game's basically over. It was a really, I mean, I know the drops helped. They definitely killed a couple drives, but part of that is – you know, in that timing rhythm offense, you missed, you haven't played for 3 weeks. You're going to be a little out of sync.
Yeah, I mean, it just Belichick learned his lesson when he kind of rested Brady before that Jets game, and they had similar issues catching the ball, completing passes. You got to start your quarterback that last week. If you're getting a bye.
Here's the thing. Aaron Rodgers doesn't get hit anyway. Two games now. The Chiefs hit him and the Giants hit him. Merrill Hodge actually made a really good point. He didn't think it was so much that he was rusty, but he pointed out that in any given game, Rodgers was usually getting rolling out or throwing on the run 3 or 4 times a game, and he was really good at it. What he pointed out was, though, the Giants flushed him out, I think, 16 times. You're not going to be 100% accurate every time you get flushed out. So I think the credit goes to the Giants' defense in this game. I mean, they played a perfect game. I mean, I know Packers scored 20, but you take away that fumble and that roughing the passer, and that's 6 points. That's pretty impressive against a team that looked unstoppable all year.
15-1. It's just so weird.
First team to ever go 15-1 and lose in the playoffs. First game.
It's just so bizarre to see a big upset like this coming a mile away, and for it to actually cash in. It's kind
of... To be fair, I don't think a ton of people actually saw the upset. I think people were like, okay, the Giants are going to give them a game. They're definitely going to cover the spread. That's what made the spread even more ridiculous.
Yeah, so I had Giants 7.5 and the under 52.5. I ended up going 4-4 with the picks. Brings my playoff record to 11-5. Still feeling pretty good about it. I'm not a totals expert, guys. I going into this week, I think we talked about it all week long, all podcast long last week. We love the dogs. That was our big play. I said, bet all 4 dogs. You're gonna hit 3 of them.
And I think both of us agreed that I think we agreed on our lock, and that was the Texans getting 7.5.
Yep.
And I think, did we both agree on the money line also?
Yeah, well...
Or did you... You went Niners, I believe. So, I mean, look.
Well, you know what? I think I said Houston, and then my other... Yeah, let's move on to this Houston-Baltimore game. Ravens won 20-13. Texans covered with that 7.5 points, and I think my other lock, because my first lock was Houston 7.5. My second lock was the over at 36 points, which... It was 20-10 at halftime. I am just stacking my chips in my brain. I'm just thinking what I'm going to do with all this money that I'm about to make. 3 points in the second half. 3 points.
Not to mention a missed field goal. That was right down the middle that somehow went short. So, look.
It hit the bottom crossbar.
There's not much to talk about here. Houston was the better team. Baltimore won thanks to that ridiculously boneheaded play by Jacoby Jones to try to field the punt at the 10-yard line and fumble.
Yeah, those early turnovers got the Ravens their 17. They had 17 points in the first quarter, 3 points the rest of the game, and the Texans were dominating the line of scrimmage. You don't see this that often in playoff games. If you dominate the line of scrimmage in the playoff game, you're going to win the game, and that's why I was big on the Texans. They covered with that half point hook. Yeah, Jacoby Jones, awful performance. I mean, it's hard to factor in stuff like, you know, punt return fumbles, muff punts, muff kickoffs, and T.J. Yates. Yeah, I understand we threw it on T.J. Yates, but I don't know.
T.J. Yates didn't lose the game.
He still looked all right, and I think they should have adjusted. I blame a little bit on Kubiak there. They should have adjusted when that lob up to Andre Johnson didn't work the first couple times, and Ed Reed almost had that interception. You got to explain to him, hey man, the way we're going to win this game is by checking down and running the ball. They were able to run the ball so well on this Ravens team.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a weird game. I definitely wouldn't be feeling good right now if I'm a Ravens fan. I still kind of feel good about my Texans to win the AFC bet. I mean, look. If Matt Schaub's their quarterback, how are they not the whatever? We don't need to talk about this.
No, we can get into it. I think part of what was getting this Houston team going was that they were playing so loose. There was no expectations when they lost Matt Schaub, Mario Williams, and Andre Johnson was out. They were just playing like, hey, we got nothing to lose, and there's a certain freedom to that. obviously Matt Schaub's a better quarterback, and if you would have plugged him in there, yes, that would have greatly improved their chances. But you can't underestimate the fact that this team kind of rallied around T.J. Yates. They played, I think, maybe a little bit harder. I don't know. I mean, I think T.J. Yates definitely played himself into a starting job this year.
I will say this. I would love to put a couple bucks. I don't know what kind of value you're going to get, but I would love to put a couple bucks after the Super Bowl on the Texans to win the AFC next year.
Well, I mean,
they were without so many key components.
They're going to be in a good position. You get Mario Williams healthy. Andre Johnson maybe works out that hammy issue.
Peyton Manning could be retiring. Did you read about that today?
Well, that was just coming from Rob Lowe's Twitter.
Hey, man, he's boys with the owner of the Colts, Israel, or whatever his name is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently there's like a legitimate connection there.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just and then I guess Peyton's family and agent came out and said
they've never heard about this, but here they also. I'm not sure if you heard the interviews of Eli Manning this week when they questioned it. They questioned him, how would he feel if Peyton were to move, were to join the Jets?
Yeah, no, I did.
And of course,
I actually have a voicemail right here, Ryan. My big brother Peyton coming to the city. I'm fit to be tied, y'all. I don't know if we'd hang out much because, you know, our schedules and all, we real busy these days.
Wow. That's almost racist.
Yeah, I don't know. It got a little, it got a little Uncle Tom there.
You don't like white folks from the country, Sean?
No. No, I just,
You don't like elite quarterbacks?
Looks like a hayseed retard.
Yeah.
Anything else pulling away from this Texans-Ravens game? Ed Reed rolled his ankle there at the end of the game.
Yeah, here's what you pull from it. Joe Flacco is scared. He is, and it's not, I don't think he's scared of the opposing defense. I think he's scared of Ray Lewis. I think he's scared of screwing up.
Look, and in his defense, he should be scared of Ray Lewis.
Yeah, Ray Lewis knows how to dispose of the suit, right?
Exactly.
We've learned that.
That suit has not been found. That's a pretty gangster move where you claim all innocent in civil trial. Unlike O.J., when Ray Lewis murdered people, Ray Lewis had the decency to pay those two people. He paid them, supposedly seven-figure settlements to each of them, like totally undisclosed, and you never heard of it again.
Yeah. Hundreds of witnesses see him wearing a white suit, and they never see the white suit. How is that not a crime, right?
Well,
there?
He is a man of color. They do have a lot of white suits. It's easy to misplace. I mean, if you were to go to Michael Irvin's house and find one particular white suit, it's like a needle in a haystack.
That's only because they're covered with coke.
Exactly. He's got a little coke problem, but that doesn't keep him off network television.
That would be great if Rich Eisen just brought that up one time.
Yeah, how does he got caught with like coke, whores? Then he got caught throwing out his crack pipe. Or no, yeah, he got caught with a crack pipe, and he said he found it at his house and he was going to drive to throw it out. That sounds like something I would say in high school. I mean, it would be crack, but.
That's
crack.
Like Adam Carolla's bit, rich man, poor man.
Yeah, yeah.
You could do it with professional athlete or high school student.
Exactly. Yeah. Weekends ruined for getting arrested for weed.
Your girlfriend stabbed you.
Yeah, and then you end up defending her. Oh, man. Good times, good times. All right, Ryan, let's go over to the
Let's quickly touch on this Patriots game.
Sure.
Because I don't want to spend a lot of time on it.
No. Sour taste in my mouth.
Yep. So what we learned is that God clearly loves Tom Brady more than Tim Tebow, A. And B, God likes Bill Belichick more than Tom Brady or Tim Tebow. So, who gives a shit? This game was awful. You didn't need to watch more than the first half. Rob Gronkowski seemed unguardable.
Well, we did have the I'm pretty sure we both agreed on this. I had the over 50, Denver 14.5. Bought that half point, Ryan. Felt good about that half point. I kept I ended up having to go to a stand-up show, and I just still kept texting Ryan. Even when it was 35-10, they were running the ball with Wilson McGahee. Still feel good about this 14.5.
That's what killed me. How do you – all right, look, you're losing by 35. You don't have a great quarterback. You still got to try to throw the ball, right?
I get it. Tebow is not good at throwing the ball, and that's why this whole story is hilarious. But the one thing he is good at is the deep ball. I guess they were really missing Decker here, but why do you not just say, all right, Thomas, next three plays, you're running fly routes down the sideline. Just send two guys both down the sidelines, fly routes. Whatever way the safety is hedging over to double team, you go the opposite way. Tim Tebow, it's one read. You're just going to chuck it up. At least make it interesting for the fans.
Yeah. I don't know. What really killed me is that New England executed the game plan perfectly on defense. Every time they blitz from the outside on Tim Tebow's right or left side, forcing him to roll out to his right.
Right.
We knew this going into the Pittsburgh game, yet Pittsburgh did not do it once.
Yeah, I think this game just exposes Tomlin's ineptitude at, because you got to figure talent-wise, is New England that much better talent-wise than Pittsburgh?
On defense, no. I mean, Dick LeBeau is a smart guy, too. I don't understand. We saw bad teams execute this model. The Bills did it. Executed that model.
They showed Dick LeBeau, like, a game plan he had written up for some left-handed guy who ran the option quarterback in 1955. How do you not...
That's right.
Do you remember they kept showing that archive
Dick
footage?
LeBeau, he knows something about the option.
Yeah, it's this black and white guy with a leather helmet.
It's like, do you really think Dick LeBeau remembers that shit? They wore leather helmets.
Well, they didn't have concussions either, Ryan.
Yeah.
It's a different time.
Don't get me started on the face mask, Sean.
So, yeah, not much to take away from here. It was... Although you felt like the Broncos had a chance early.
No. Their chance... we were watching the game, again, at Sean's house, and some folks went out. Basically, because the first game went so long, the second game's kickoff was immediately following the ending of the Niners-Saints game.
Yeah.
And some folks we were watching games with, it was a pretty intense game. They went out to smoke a cigarette. They came inside. New England had already scored a touchdown.
Speaking of which, Ryan, you're...
oh boy!
You're hacking. I don't even remember the last time I've seen you smoke a cigarette. Maybe like three times since knowing you.
I've probably smoked a total of one pack of cigarettes in my life before last weekend. Friday night.
Ryan had a cigarette. Oh, okay.
Friday night. I get drunk. I had to drive home. Got to cool out. Sober up a little bit. So I'm like, I'll smoke a cigarette. So one cigarette leads to, like, half a pack. That's not a smart move when you don't smoke. So, I got mildly addicted to cigarettes. And midway through the Giants game, it's halftime. I'm really stressing out. It's go outside and, you know, have to smoke a cigarette. Don't see what's so odd about that. Just a man enjoying some nicotine.
But it's just so out of place. It's great.
Yeah. It's a little bit out of character.
Okay. And the Saturday early game, exciting game to the very last second, the 49ers, 36-32. 49ers, well, they were getting 3.5 points, and they hit the over, which was 47. Exciting game all around. Plenty of action early and late. The middle dragged a little bit, but of course there were those two touchdown drives by Alex Smith, one to counter New Orleans to win the game, Vernon Davis. But, just an exciting game overall. I think it's kind of how we saw this game shaken out. It's kind of why we like the 49ers, that the Saints wouldn't be the same team on turf. They wouldn't be the same team outside. You could see it in the way that I think the real thing was not so much the way the Saints team played, but Darren Sproles noticeably different in the way he cuts on that turf.
You know what? The turf was definitely a big story. The whole field's 5 feet under sea level or whatever, and it's soggy. But the big thing was the Niners came out hitting. When they knocked, Jimmy Graham fell hard, kind of looked like he got a concussion.
Yeah, it looked like
it. Didn't know where he was. But then when on that opening drive, when Pierre Thomas, who's running hard, on the 2-yard line gets popped by Dante Whitner, completely knocked out, fumbled the ball, that's when it was like, holy, like, you could see after Darren Sproles took a couple hits, he wasn't trying to run into contact as hard. And I think there's some, I think the Giants did that to a certain extent to the Packers receivers. I think there's something to get just getting hit and playing a defense that's willing to hit.
was it Smith, Justin Smith on the defensive line?
Yeah.
He was just dominating that offensive line. There was that one play where he just blew up the left tackle, pushed him right into Drew Brees, and then reached over.
He bear hugged him and sacked Drew Brees while.
Grabbed Drew Brees.
It was amazing.
Also, a quick side note, just for all the games, it seems like I heard this on the NFL Network on Sirius, something like 382 pass plays, three holding penalties called.
Yeah.
There were only three penalties called in this 49ers-Saints game.
All on the 49ers.
Yeah. But, I mean, two were like false starts or something kind of obvious.
It definitely seems like they're letting them play.
Overall, letting them play.
With the exception of the Giants game where they made some atrocious calls.
Well, I mean, I don't remember. What other one was really bad besides that late hit?
Letting it play as a fumble and then overturning it, forcing the Giants to challenge and then not overturning the challenge?
That was pretty crazy. Yeah, I guess thinking of more of a penalty sense.
But from a penalty sense, I feel like the officials, I'd much rather them let them play than, you know, call everything.
The NFL will never admit to this, but they understand that it's playoff time. Guys have been, you know, chasing money all season. This is the playoff times. They don't want to have someone curse the NFL for. They don't want to have a flag decide a penalty in a playoff game, and you got to give it up for the league. Just overall, the league has a good sense of. I mean, as much as I hated all the bullshit roughing the passer penalties that they called during the regular season, they did a good job of letting quarterbacks get hit in the playoffs.
And maybe, makes it even more crazy that the Packers weren't able to defend that Hail Mary. Like, they could have tackled him, and they wouldn't have called pass interference.
Oh, no. Yeah, dude, they barely call that. Yeah, speaking of which, we're talking about the NFC Championship game. Brings me back to that one fateful. Was it the NFC Championship, 49ers-Giants, where the Giants botched the field goal to win?
Oh, no, it was the divisional round. And they even showed the highlight this past weekend. And obviously, play's probably not going to work. It's like a lineman lined up his tackle downfield. But the 49er guy just flat out tackles him. Full-on spear tackle. And it's like, well, wait a second.
He just pulled him down. There was no. He just tackled the guy when he was theoretically out for a pass, even though it was just a botched call that they chucked up. I mean, they deserve credit for, you know, running that play and having that in mind.
But back to this Saints game. I mean, it was a pretty amazing fourth quarter.
I mean, Ryan, we had money on the 49ers plus 3.5, but honestly, when Alex Smith was that last drive with the minute 15, they were on their own 15-yard line, something like that. Did you have any faith that Alex Smith could drive down?
Not only that, but I was cursing myself for, again, betting on three bad quarterbacks. I mean, I took Alex Smith, I took T.J. Yates, and I took Tim Tebow. It's so frustrating to bet on bad quarterbacks and watch them do bad things. But
yeah, you were even complaining about betting on Alex Smith while we were watching the Broncos-Patriots game when you had already won the bet and Alex Smith had already gotten a great drive down the field. Ryan, are we just these stubborn sports fans that are refusing to acknowledge the awakening moment that Alex Smith has right now? The transition from good quarterback to possible greatness?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's all that's keeping the Giants spread from being a pick 'em. I mean, look, he's had three good games in his career now, and granted, all season he hasn't blown it for the Niners.
Well, and again, we talked about this off mic. That's a showbiz term right there. We talked about this off mic when we were eating cheesesteaks, that the 49ers, 36 points, you're like, wow, they must have. They really lit up the Saints, but you kind of forget that for a long stretch in the second and third quarter, this offense was ugly. They were not doing anything. They didn't seem to have any sort of game plan when it came to moving the ball. I think it's just maybe the.
In 55 minutes against a really bad defense, they only mustered up 20 points, I think. And two of those touchdowns were off turnover, so they weren't exactly doing much.
I think there was a while there where they had 17 points off four turnovers.
And, I mean, look, Greg Williams, he gets all this credit for having all these blitz schemes and this and that, but at the end of the day, if Vernon Davis is the only guy beating you, you got to cover Vernon Davis. It's just.
Yes.
It's the same with San Francisco's, like, vaunted defense, right? You can't let Sproles beat you. You can't let Jimmy Graham beat you. within a minute or 2 minutes at the end of the game, they let Jimmy Graham beat them with a long touchdown, and they let Darren Sproles beat them with a long touchdown. That's why, I don't know. Anyway, we'll talk about that later, but go ahead.
I mean, just the idea that they got all those turnovers and still weren't able to put more up. But you got to give San Francisco credit in that when they were in the red zone, they did put it in. Harbaugh had a great call on that bootleg for Alex Smith.
That was an awesome play.
But yeah, it was. And they got the ball to Vernon Davis. They got the ball to their playmaker. They fed Frank Gore, even though he didn't have a great game. They still forced New Orleans to keep honest with the run. I mean, Harbaugh is still good, I think, for like one kind of bad call. I mean,
like,
he had
like the throwback he attempted, like the pitch to Frank Gore, and he tried to throw it back to Alex Smith.
It was more just bad because where they were at on the field.
And not only that, but Alex, I was watching the replay yesterday on NFL Network, and during the stretch where San Francisco wasn't doing well, Alex Smith, in a situation where you, like, anyone watching the game clearly saw they were blitzing. Somehow, yeah, Alex Smith didn't see they were blitzing, and he was taking these horrible, like, 15-yard sacks.
It was on his right side. Okay, so I understand a free safety comes up. He's a right-handed quarterback. A free safety comes up to the left tackle side, and you get blindsided. This is right on your face. This is... Yeah. You know, a guy like Eli Manning, a guy like Tom Brady, who's calling out the
mics. They're not taking that sack.
They're not taking that sack. You got to make the adjustment. You got to call out the mic, tell the offensive lineman who to block, where to block. You know every one of their assignments. I don't think he's quite to that level, but I did see an ability to pass the ball and place the ball in locations that I hadn't seen before out of Alex Smith. And San Francisco had a decent number of drops, if I remember correctly. Might have been four or five drops. I remember...
Oh, yeah. I mean, you notice that stuff when you bet on a team.
Yeah.
Like when Crabtree drops two in a row over the middle for first down, you're like, God.
Right. I'm saying there was a period, too, that the 49ers receivers weren't helping out Alex Smith. I think Alex Smith had a really good game, especially in crunch time, especially that nice run. So
I just don't... I mean, they talked about it all week, how Alex Smith was great against the blitz, and I didn't see it.
No, I agree. He did not make adjustments on the blitz, and they were getting creamed for it.
So anyway, but yeah, it was great. I mean, it was probably one of the best playoff games in the past, I don't know, I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I mean, how do you compare? Because we've had such epic Super Bowls that were kind of just getting spoiled.
But even Super Bowl 42 is a similar model, right? Not much happened in the second and third quarters, and then the fourth quarter was this awesome quarter.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's up there. There were two – I mean, a great drive from New Orleans thinking they won the game, then a nice counter by San Francisco thinking, you know, which they ended up winning the game. Vernon Davis crying like a bitch. I'm not sure if that goes into affecting the line or not, but – as a man, I feel like that's got to.
If you cry, that means you think you have accomplished something. Yeah. If they think that was their accomplishment, then it's going to be hard to get up for this game. Especially
right,
now
you already cried like a pussy. I mean,
yeah, especially now that they're – I mean, I know it's Vegas and they, you know, the players don't pay attention to the lines. That's all bullshit. If a team sees that they're favored, that definitely changes the mentality, especially a team that's been – kind of thriving on the underdog role all year, even though they had a really good season.
All right, Ryan. I feel like we're dancing around with the devil. Let's get to it. The final four of the NFL season, what we've all been waiting for. The Baltimore Ravens head into Foxborough, where they're getting only 7 points currently at tape date. It's been dancing around 7.5.
So, to give you some background, opened at 6.5. You know, sharps like myself pounced on it immediately. I grabbed it at 6.5 on Sunday afternoon. It then moved to 7.5, and since has moved back to 7. Not sure. This is an interesting spread. At 7.5, it's definitely a tricky spread. I'm not sure how you approach the 7.5, but at 7, I don't know. To me, it's a no-brainer. I got Tom Brady playing lights out. I got a defense that actually looked like they weren't horrible last week. And I got Joe Flacco. And I also have the Baltimore Raven defense, who hasn't looked good against spread attacks this year. Bottom line. You look at the way they played the Chargers. You look at the way they played... I'm blanking on the other team I was going to use. But they haven't, on passing attacks that can spread the field, they haven't been great at stopping the pass.
Well, because they want to keep Ray Lewis on the field. But if the Patriots force...
Ray Lewis can't guard either tight end.
Yeah, Ray Lewis cannot cover Anthony Hernandez. He cannot cover... Or Aaron Hernandez. I feel like I was calling Anthony. He can't cover Aaron Hernandez, and he can't cover Rob Gronkowski. I mean, I feel like most people in the league have trouble covering Rob Gronkowski. I just don't see what slows down this New England Patriots team right now. They are in FU mode. I think the only way the Patriots falter here's I'm giving you – I like New England -7. I'll give you that pick right now before I get into it. I'm gonna give you a counter scenario. I'm going to give you the Ravens covering, Ravens winning scenario. Here it is. Tom Brady throws at least two interceptions, similar in that way that he, in that Denver game, just completely sailed the ball, hit the Denver free safety right in the gut, and Baltimore is able to take advantage of those turnovers that New England gives them. The Baltimore Ravens are not going to win this game, and they're not going to cover without more than two interceptions, or at least two interceptions from Tom Brady. Secondly, Ray Rice needs to dominate this game. You need to limit the number of possessions that Tom Brady has, okay? Because if they can just stay in that hurry-up mode, put up points quick, force you to go score for score for them, you're done. You need to actually just win this kickoff, or win the coin flip, get the ball, and just milk that clock, pound Ray Rice, maybe get one or two deep balls to Torrey Smith, and that's your blueprint for winning the game.
You have to execute what the Giants did in the Super Bowl 4 years ago, which is what you said. Get the ball, have an eight-minute drive, and get points. But here's the thing, though. For me to take the Ravens here, I need to trust Joe Flacco. I don't trust Joe Flacco.
Well, and here's
the
thing. Brady... Brady is susceptible to the interior blitz, that kind of delayed interior blitz get up in his face. But now I think with these two dynamic tight ends, his checkdowns are that much easier to get to. I think it forces you to play much more coverage on the tight ends than you ever had to. I think right now these Patriots are unstoppable.
I mean, the problem is the Ravens aren't a team that's going to get pressure with just rushing forward. They like to blitz. I don't think that's how you beat – you can't beat Tom Brady blitzing. If you blitz Tom Brady, he's going to pick you apart. You look at the way the Steelers beat him. You look at the way the Giants beat him. They played man coverage and rushed four, and that was it. I mean, you can't send extra men. Tom Brady's going to beat you, especially with the way the tight ends are playing. Also, I love the over. It did open at 48. It's moved all the way up to 50 or 50.5.
Yeah, I think anything under 52, you got to take the over here.
I honestly don't see. I mean, we're talking about a game that could easily be 31-21. I don't see the Patriots not scoring 30
points. Of these two, though, I definitely like New England -7 better than the over under because I could see this kind of. I could see it being a 35-7 game. I think if New England gets points early, gets points quick, they're going to put Joe Flacco in a pass-only situation, and I think New England's defense is going to be able to take care of that. If they can take Ray Rice out of the game early, I think it's going to be a long day for these Baltimore Ravens.
Now, how bad this defense has been this year, Bill Belichick still can do a pretty good job of confusing bad quarterbacks. And again, Joe Flacco's a bad quarterback. I wouldn't even say Joe Flacco is – if you look at his quarterback numbers, he's below average. I mean, he's not a good quarterback. I don't know.
Here's another thing I looked up. Surprisingly, since 1970, Joe Flacco is one of the top QBs in road wins. He's 4-3 on the road, which I guess four road wins in the playoffs is a pretty high number. Eli Manning being higher than him on the list at 4-1. I think it's based on their defense, and I don't think their defense is the same. Just an interesting stat I stumbled upon, Ren.
Yeah.
Hopefully we won't be eating crow. And, of course, I like this. in the two-team tease. I like you teasing that New England down to minus one. That feels like a lock to me.
So I was going to bring up, so since we're there's only two games to talk about, what's your take on the money line? Is there any value in Baltimore money line?
I don't see it, man. I really don't.
So just 83% of money line bets coming in, on the Ravens seems high to me. It seems like a money line that isn't – I don't feel like that's proper value. 3-1 is basically saying that one out of every four games the Ravens will win. I don't see that. The way these two teams are playing, I don't think the Ravens win one out of three games.
Be one out of five. I think for me to
– this should be a plus – I agree it should be plus 400 minimum.
Yeah, I mean, plus 350, I'll think about maybe putting a lottery check on the Ravens.
I actually kind of – I think there's almost value in the Patriots' money line just because I don't see them – I don't see how they lose this game.
Yeah, but I think you're better if you're going to – I don't know. I don't like – if you're going to go minus 330
– You're probably better off doing a two-team tease.
Yeah, I mean
– for minus 110.
Yeah, if you're looking for a sure thing, just New England to win by one, I think why not just do that and then tease the over-under down to 44.5.
Yeah.
Or tied into something.
I mean, yeah, so...
Tied into something in the late game, so if something happens, then you can just chase it in the second half games. You'll be all right. I would recommend staying away from any halftime bets. They're just garbage, man. Because here's the thing. Unless... second half bet's fine. Don't bet on the first half, Sean, and everyone listening to this podcast, because it's an the first half's over. So now, if you lost that first half bet, now you're gonna have to either chase the money or sit through the second half feeling like
the game's over. Here's the thing: if you want to bet a half, always bet the second half. Not only will it allow you to watch the game and get a feeling for it. But most likely, there's usually value in the second half bets if you feel strongly about the way one team's playing. And the first half bets are such a crapshoot. You never know. I mean, look, you could be – typically when you bet a first half, you're either right by a mile or you're wrong by a mile.
This is a good point, Ryan. I feel like we should have gotten on this game earlier, betting second halves, because not only do you get that to watch that first half, you have the adjusted game line, you also – go in knowing who's going to get that extra possession.
Well, especially, yeah, not only that, but so you've probably bet the game. You know what you have value in, just like a stock. Okay, I've got the Patriots at -6.5 for this game. Let's say it goes to halftime, and the Patriots are up by 14, and they now they're making a line of Ravens -4.5. All right, so do I want to throw more money on the Patriots -10.5? Probably not.
Right, that's the thing. You bet on the team you like going into the game, and the second half, you can take that second half bet. You can
middle, some, maybe.
There's a lot of times there's a sweet chance to middle. Like I'm kicking myself for not middling on that Houston Baltimore over at 36.
Would have covered yourself.
Right, I should have bet the under in the second half. There was a sweet middle there.
13 points.
I would have ended up pushing just because I would have got that instead of losing outright because I would have got that under by a mile. But I would have had, since they scored 30 in the first half and I only needed 6 for the over, that was between 6. Let's say
you would have had a 13.5 point window depending on when you bet it.
Yeah, no, yeah, the over under the second half was 19.5. So I would have had between 6 and 19.5 covered.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, being a great sports gambler is looking yourself in the mirror and realizing, hey, this is where I went wrong. You know, everyone likes to go over tape, Ryan, but I think we got to do that as gamblers to take our shit to the next level. Realize, hey, man, there was opportunity there. There was value.
But enough with the undercard. Let's get to the main event.
The main event. The new NFC Championship. Who will it go to? The New York Football Giants coming into Candlestick Park, getting 2.5 points.
Rematch of the 1991 conference championship where Matt Barr kicked 5 field goals.
Plus 120. Giants on the money line. Over under at 41.5.
Wow, that is sinking. That over under is dropping. It opened at 44.
Wow. All right.
People do not like that one. And for good reason. I mean, the Giants defense is going to hold San Francisco. The San Francisco defense is really good. It would be surprising if either team scored over 27 points.
All right. That being said, this much late line movement, give me the opposite of the public. Yeah. I'll take the over here.
I definitely under 42. It's not. I mean, now we're in the zone where we're talking, you know, a 27-17 game. Does that get you? That gets you over. That 27-17 gets you over.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. My take is, again, bet it early. I grabbed it as soon as it
23-21 gets you over.
Yeah. I bet it when it opened. I bet it Giants plus 3. Feel really good about that.
Yeah, I mean, you want to talk about lock of the week.
At 2.5?
As much as I hate it, tease the Patriots down to minus 1 and tease the Giants up to 8.5.
Yeah, that's you're going to lay minus 110 on that bet. And the question becomes, which team screws you?
Well, but then you have... Yeah, but if New England doesn't, if Ravens win outright, and then just throw, you know, $13 on the Ravens money line.
Yeah, I don't know. Hard for me to see the Giants losing this game for the obvious reasons, but even more so,
Giants fan.
Even more so, the way they're playing right now on both sides of the ball.
All right, Ryan.
No, let's listen for a second.
I'm listening.
Their offense, they just finished holding the Packers to 20. Inflated points while putting up 37 points. Now, they will be playing a much better San Francisco defense, but look, the last time they played, they were basically without Nicks and Manningham. I just don't think you can stop all these receivers. I don't think you can stop what Eli Manning's doing right now. If you blitz him, he's going to beat you. If you sit it back, he's going to beat you. They're going to run the ball, and their defense is, they don't need to blitz. Their defense doesn't blitz. They're going to get to the quarterback, and I predict OC has a sack fumble return for a touchdown. I think that will be the turning point in the game.
Wow. I like your calling your shot.
I think it's going to be much like 2 years ago when OC sack fumble returned his own fumble for a touchdown. This to me feels like a game the Giants win 24-17.
All right,
which,
Ryan.
Which puts you right on the total.
Yeah, 41.5.
I like this under until it dropped, to be honest with you.
I agree. This to me feels like 42 points. That's where it should be.
Yeah, the total's probably right. It's tough to go either way on that. Now that being said, if I'm doing a 4-team teaser here.
Yeah, what do you like? Is that 10 points?
No. Well, we're talking super teaser, we can go 13 points. Now, if you're doing a 4-team, 13-point teaser, you go, without even thinking about it, you go Patriots plus 6. You go Giants plus 15.5.
Wow.
You go over 47.5.
Wait.
47. For the Patriots.
No, it would be 37.5.
Sorry, over 37.5. And you go under 54.5.
Wow, I almost like it going the other way.
Yeah.
18, or no, it'd be 28.5.
Yeah, 28.5, Sean.
54, dude. It could easily be 28, or it could easily be 32.
I'll tell you one bet I will be making this weekend, Sean.
Yeah.
Under San Francisco team points.
Whatever it is, you like the
No, here, I'll tell you what it's going to be. So do the math real quick. So we're basically talking about a 42-point game.
All right, now I'm just going to argue for the 49ers. I'm technically going to take the Giants. I say buy that half point if you're going to just lay the Giants. Actually, you know what? Just don't be a pussy.
Take the money line.
2.5. Okay, here's the thing. I'll give you an argument for why the 49ers. Why the 49ers? Because they're playing hard, man. They're playing tough. They got the two Smiths on the defense looking really good, creating lots of turnovers, okay? Turnovers seem to come in bunches. I think they might be able to get to Manning, might be able to get a couple picks. They already beat the Giants, Ryan, like you said, 27-20 in Candlestick. And perhaps it's called 3-com now. And staggering statistic, Ryan. The 49ers, 13-3-1.
Let me chime in.
I know you were all season.
Players who did not play in the first matchup: Hakeem Nicks, David Boss, their starting center, Ahmad Bradshaw, Mario Manningham banged up with a knee injury, OC Manure banged up with a knee injury. I mean, Michael Boley had first game back coming off a hamstring injury. Just a lot. I mean, to say that they're the same teams that played back then, it's crazy.
Here's the thing, Ryan. Giants have done well against teams who spread it out. Green Bay Packers, shotgun formation, spread it out. That leaves a lot of one-on-one matchups for these four stud defensive guys. San Francisco, they don't like those lineups. They don't like those matchups. They throw out a lot of 22 formation, as we call in the business. Two tight ends, two backs. Okay?
Nice.
I think they're going to do that a lot, and I think they're going to compress the game even more than they did against the Saints. It's going to be a lot of people in staying in the block, a lot of double teaming. They're going to give Alex Smith enough time just by the amount of guys they're keeping in, and I think that's going to help them keep it close. Although I still like the
Giants. So here's the counter. Atlanta essentially runs a better version of – Atlanta and San Francisco runs very similar offenses.
They run a lot of two tight ends, Atlanta?
Atlanta's just better. They run a lot of one wide out formations. They try to pound the rock.
Yeah, but Atlanta's defense is nowhere near
San
Francisco defense is playing.
It's
at
actually
home.
Yeah.
The stadium's gonna be rocking. Eli Manning, Ryan. Did Eli Manning practice today, Thursday?
He did. And then he left a little early because he had a shit. I mean, that when you read stomach illness, that means he had to take a shit.
He had the flu, Ryan.
All right.
Tom Coughlin's hoping it's a 24-hour bug. Now you're going to take a cross-country flight out to San Francisco?
Sean, we've been to that stadium. It doesn't get loud. It's not a loud stadium.
Ryan, San Francisco also coming off long week. Get that extra day of rest. Oh.
Yeah, all right.
It's a lot of flying for this New York team. I don't remember them on that heralded 2007 run. I don't remember them playing out in the West Coast. I don't remember that.
No, they just had to fly to Tampa, Dallas, and Green Bay. I mean, none of those flights are short.
I don't remember any West Coast games.
Those are all two-hour flights. Anyway.
They're not used to these 12:30 West Coast
kickoffs. Look, if you're interested in probably sweating the game out, because your team kicks a lot of field goals and doesn't move the ball on offense, feel free to take San Francisco -2.5. But, yeah, good luck with that.
All right, as much as it pains me. Well, actually, you know what? I'm just going to go all in on this Giants team and just do my best to jinx it.
Yeah,
go big on the Giants. Big blue, baby. This is our week. We're going to the Super Bowl where we're going to get murdered by the Patriots. Oh. Ryan, give me. All right,
before we move on,
yeah,
let's
run through the props.
I noticed not a lot of good props this week. I didn't notice anything fun except for this one prop. How many times will Peyton Manning be mentioned during the live broadcast of the game? Over under 2.5 times.
Oh man, I like that under. I think they're just going to mention. Well, how many times they say Peyton Manning? I think they're just going to bring it up once because of Rob Lowe's tweet. But I think after that, I don't think they're going to bring it up.
Now, keep in mind, Joe Buck is doing this game. Do you want to reconsider?
I hate everything about Joe Buck.
I think this goes over maybe before kickoff.
I don't know. It's tough, man. There's so many storylines going into this game. Even if they try to crowbar Peyton Manning. So I say you pound that Peyton Manning under story.
Another interesting one I saw. How many Harbaughs will appear in the 2012 Super Bowl? 0 plus 180. 1 minus 140. 2 plus 450.
I mean, wouldn't you be better just parlaying the Ravens and San Francisco money line?
What I'm curious about is...
Okay, so it's two Harbaughs is plus 245?
Yeah.
You're getting Ravens money line at plus 260.
That's bad value, but zero...
is what?
Plus 180. That parlaying minus 330 with plus 120 ain't going to get you there.
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a Harbaugh randomly gets hired on.
All right, let's run through a couple more fun weekend props.
Sure.
Most passing yards. Tom Brady, minus 110.
Wow.
Eli Manning, plus 125. Mm. Joe Flacco, plus 450. Alex Smith.
Give me Alex Smith.
Plus 750.
Wow.
Against a team with horrible defensive backs. It wouldn't not completely far-fetched for the Giants to have a lead in this game.
Yeah. I actually like that Alex Smith bet.
In terms of value, that's...
Yeah, I mean, plus one obviously makes sense why Brady's favored, et cetera, but... I like that long. That's a fun plus 750 bet.
Okay, here's another one. Who will record the most rushing yards? Ray Rice -150, which that's a horrible bet. Frank Gore +130. Ahmad Bradshaw 6-1.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, this one, and Brandon Jacobs is 12-1. Not sure. I mean, Ray Rice is probably the obvious pick here. There might even be value in
this. I don't know if there's a lot. I mean, I guess the way I see the game going, they're going to be down. They're going to be forced to pass.
But my favorite one of the weekend. So we have most receiving yards. Hakeem Nicks, 7-2. Wes Welker, 4-1. Gronkowski, 9-2. Victor Cruz, 5-1. Aaron Hernandez, 7-1. But my pick, either Anquan Boldin at 7-1 or Torrey Smith at 10-1.
Well, yeah, I mean, Torrey Smith, it's like, all right, does he catch a couple bombs? Or?
Well, mainly because, A, they can't guard it. I mean, Tim Tebow didn't exploit them, but their secondary is awful. And B, maybe the same reason you take Joe Flacco for passing yards, I just don't – they're going to be losing by a lot of points. They're going to be heaving the rock.
Yeah.
I say you throw a couple – oh, Vernon Davis is also 10-1, by the way.
I kind of like the tight ends this week. I like Vernon Davis or Gronkowski.
But one last prop. What will be the exact outcome of the 2012 Super Bowl?
Sure.
I'm not going to run through them all. But if you – my favorite is New York Giants. New York Giants beat New England at 6-1.
Wow.
So here's the thing. Even if you were to parlay Giants +120, let all that ride next week, I don't see the Giants being – Giants are going to be what, four-and-a-half-point dogs against the Patriots probably?
I mean, I guess depending on how the game shakes out, the greatest I would see it would be 7. That's a stretch.
Yeah, well, if it's seven, then the parlay is better because you can probably get +300. But my point is, I don't think they're going to be anything more than +200 against the Patriots. Anyway,
makes sense, Ryan.
Yeah,
makes sense. All right, thank you, everyone, for listening to Sports Gambling Podcast. Make sure you log on to sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You want to throw out a lock of the week, Ryan? I mean, at this point, it's almost...
The lock has to be the Patriots.
That's what I was going to say. New England -7 is my lock, man.
New England, I just don't see how they lose this game. And the way New England scores points, 7 points might as well be 3 points. I think the fair line, you have to make this line greater than 7 for me to be scared of it. So I love where I got it. I got it at 6.5. I think that's going to be money in the bank. I also like the over. Like we said,
One bet, Ryan.
Yeah.
New England -7. All right. That's what I like. That's my lock of the week. Thank you, everyone. SportsGamblingPodcast.com, WinTheTrophy.com, referral code STG. You can get the Amazon link and the Stitcher link, iTunes link, all on sportsgamblingpodcast.com. For Sean Green, he's...
Kramer-centric.
Let it ride. Oh, and follow me on Twitter, @GreenRoomShow. Let it ride.